My name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Monday, November 1st. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
You look at it again and again and again, as I have, and you start to see little things happening everywhere that just don't seem, A, like they line up with what the police said, or B, like you would want police to be acting.
On August 21st, the RCMP unloaded pepper spray into a crowd of protesters at Ferry Creek. The RCMP claimed they did so to clear a path for an officer who was knocked unconscious. They lied. And today we bring you the real story and explain how our investigation led us there. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Pacific Opera Victoria. Filmed in Victoria and soon to make its world premiere, Pacific Opera Victoria presents an enchanting indie opera film. The Garden of Alice is magically eye-popping, a cinematic experience that reimagines your favorite classic, looking well beyond childhood and fully at life. Visit pacificopera.ca for further information. Hey, if you found this investigation helpful and you wanted to know how you can help the Capital Daily Podcast and Capital Daily go forward with more work like this, well, then you can, number one, rate and review this podcast on the app that you're listening to right now, if it allows it, and also check out our membership opportunity at capitaldaily.ca/member. Today, we released an extensive investigation involving a pepper spray incident at Ferry Creek. So the Municipal Monday episode this week will be a Municipal Tuesday. On August 24th, we released an episode of the podcast where we questioned RCMP Sergeant Chris Manso, the media relations officer for Ferry Creek, over an August 21st incident involving pepper spray. He gave an explanation for the occurrence, however, we now know that the RCMP lied to us. Here is what he initially told us.
The difficulty with showing a snippet of any video is that anything preceding that action is not seen or understood. I can tell you that just prior to the deployment of OC spray, a member was pushed, was shoved, was knocked down, and actually struck their head and ended up becoming unconscious, and they had to be airlifted out of the area. Direction was given to the crowd to follow police direction to move out of the way. They did not follow that direction. OC spray was deployed, and then they followed the direction, and that member could be removed from that area. There is video of that as well. I haven't seen it, but it's been reported to me by a journalist from a very large media outlet, so I know that that's a legitimate thing. Again, the actions of the protesters, once again, are dictating the actions of the police.
Okay, so just to get it clear, you're saying that there was an injury from the RCMP, and they were trying to airlift that person out, so that the directive was to get out of the way or be pepper sprayed?
Yeah, that's what I'm being told, is that the member was injured. The protesters still wouldn't follow police direction, a large group of them. OC spray was sprayed, and then the protesters did move out of the way and follow directions afterwards.
Do you know if that group was posing a danger to the person?
That I don't know. I just know that they weren't following direction, and then pepper spray was used, and then they did follow the direction of the members that were on scene.
What is the discretion for using that tactic?
Well, I think... following the direction, there was somebody who was injured on the ground. It kind of changes the perspective of the members on the ground. Are they now fearful that they could be injured themselves? Mm-hmm. Is that crowd going to turn? That's, you know, up to the direction and decision making of the members that are working there on the ground at the time. You know, you can put rules and regulations as much as you want. However, the decision rests with that member that's there on the ground.
It wasn't long after this episode that video was released contradicting the RCMP's claims. We followed up with Chris Manso, giving the RCMP an opportunity to explain why the evidence was not supporting their claims. This is what he said after that. We have received a video that kind of depicts that shows the actual events that happened.
Like the entire event?
So it's here, I can explain the video to you.
Okay.
There's a large crowd of protesters huddled together and linked. Officers are surrounding them, trying to forcefully pull them apart. One of the videos pans over to the officer who has fallen near the crowd. Most people nearby seem to notice, and yells of stop are heard from multiple people. It is unclear if those are the RCMP, protesters, or both, given that most people are wearing masks. The crowd and RCMP officers involved in the crowd are seen moving further away from the fallen officer. He is given space, and other officers check on him and help him. The fallen officer then crawls away from the divot in the ground, stands up, puts his hat back on, and walks away. It is then after this interaction with the injured officer safely away from the crowd that another officer is seen approaching the group with pepper spray. And it isn't until about 3 minutes after that we see the first use of pepper spray. Does this line up with what you had originally told me?
You know what, I would have to see it, and I'm only going on, obviously I wasn't there, so I'm only going on the information that was given to me by the commanders, the members that were there.
Mm-hmm.
I know, I'd have to see it before I could speak to it. If I'd even be able to speak to it, I know it's one of those things. I have been just harangued for, you know, 3 seconds of video that I haven't seen recently.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I'm getting so frustrated.
Yeah.
Myself personally, you know, obviously I've got a job to do and I want to make sure that information I put out is accurate. I just don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay, no worries. I know that you are going to be going by what you heard because you weren't there.
Yeah.
And it seems like the videos are just kind of making their way out still. Do you think that it's possible that the officers who were there and reported it, given that what you had told me and what the video shows are different, do you think it's possible that they lied about it?
No, I don't believe so at all.
Okay, so then if it does seem that the video is different than what they explained, how would you explain that then?
Again, I would have to see it, and then the officers would have to justify their actions.
Okay.
Again, all of the officers, you know, they were wearing body cameras. We were filming it ourselves. I know that the commanders have been made aware. There's been no concerns raised by the actions at that time.
Okay.
Nothing to me, or nothing that I'm aware of, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So, the officers wouldn't. Wouldn't be lying or embellishing their actions at all.
Okay. Is there an internal investigation going on?
That I don't know. And if there was, I wouldn't be able to speak to it because of part of the process.
Okay.
But, nothing's been mentioned to me. Okay. However, if there was, again, I wouldn't be able to speak to it.
Yeah. You say that there were body cams. Is it possible that footage will be released?
Yeah. Any body cam footage that members have, what could be used either for the criminal process or for the civil process or for the complaint process.
I then emailed Chris the videos we were referring to, and he did not respond to that email. Since then, Capital Daily and Ricochet Media have been working together to investigate exactly what happened that day. We analyzed the event from 9 different videos at various angles, as well as personal accounts. This is what we learned. Most of the relevant action happens within about a minute and a half. The crowd struggles against the police, and one officer loses his footing and falls backwards. The protesters are in what's known as a blob, linking arms to prevent anyone from being singled out for arrest. They notice what's happening on the ground, and the police are shouting at them to move back. People within the crowd also signal to one another to move back, and they do, moving away from the officer on the ground. This directly contradicts what the RCMP told us, that the crowd was out of control and presented a danger to the officer. The officer on the ground crawls away while another officer runs to a truck to get pepper spray. By now, the officer who fell is clear of the crowd and moving of his own power. It's apparent that if he was knocked unconscious, it was extremely brief, and that if he received medical treatment, it wasn't right there at that moment. BC Emergency Health Services tells us they treated protesters on the scene for exposure to pepper spray, and no other injuries were reported. As the officer returns with the pepper spray, he passes the one that had been on the ground. In the meantime, 2 vehicles have been able to get around the crowd, which by now has been contained. This disproves what the RCMP said about the need to clear the route for evacuation. The pepper spray wouldn't be used for another 3 minutes and 15 seconds from this moment. Today, Capital Daily and Ricochet Media have released a joint piece about the incident and our investigation. And now we're going to walk you through how we came to our conclusions. Capital Daily managing editor Jimmy Thompson was among the many team members that contributed to this investigation. He joins us now. Jimmy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we've been looking into this for a while, and it goes back to the summer, but at what point after the original incident and the RCMP statement did you decide that something wasn't adding up here?
You know, I think that right after this happened, we both had suspicions, you and I, and we were talking after you had done your episode on this incident, and I think I just mentioned to you, like, okay, well, let's just get some medical records or something from the RCMP, flight records, just anything that that can sort of corroborate their side of the story, and we can move on. It wasn't that we thought, you know, the police are definitely lying here. It's that we just wanted to do our due diligence and treat police information as we would information from any other source.
Okay, and at some point this turned into an investigation. When would you say that started?
Well, we got a grant from the Journalists for Human Rights, and it was for misinformation reporting. And so this kind of had been in the back of my mind as an issue that just really, I think, bore a deeper look. It wasn't necessarily that we knew anything that was wrong, but that we thought if ever there was an incident where we can put up what the RCMP says publicly against what actually happened on the ground, it's this issue that had serious consequences, but also was very well documented in this incident at Ferry Creek. Overall, that is, you know, not very well documented a lot of the time. So here's one where we can really drill down and see what actually happened.
Yeah, we actually had a lot of videos and different evidence being sent to us on it. And I think it's really what made this investigation possible, because it's super important to make sure that you're accounting for all the details and looking at everything from every angle. When you are doing an investigation like this, though, as a journalist, how do you make sure that you are taking everything into account?
I don't think it's possible to take everything into account, but we were taking as much into account as we could. So that meant in interviews with people who were on the ground, reaching out again and again to the RCMP and trying to get any information we can from them. Affidavits that have been filed in court that we managed to get our hands on. As much video. I mean, I've searched every combination of words I can think of on YouTube and social media to try and find videos of this incident. You can never know. For example, I know that there are videos out there that I don't have, because first of all, the police have body cam footage that they won't give us. The police had a camera person there who they haven't provided that video for us either. And there are also people running around with cameras that I can see on the other videos. And I don't have their videos either. So there is definitely missing information here, but I think that we've done a pretty good job of compiling everything that is available to us.
In compiling all this evidence, when did you first start to realize that things weren't corroborating the RCMP story?
I think right away, when you look at this video, you see that it doesn't really line up with what the police say. The biggest thing being the distance between when the police officer falls over and when they deploy the pepper spray. It's not what they describe as, the crowd was threatening the officer and they had to use the pepper spray to clear the crowd to get the officer out. That's not what happened. And that's just immediately clear. No matter which angle you look at this video, at these videos from, it's not what happened. And then you get into more detail. And I mean, I've been calling it a Where's Waldo of weird police violence, but like, you look at it again and again and again, as I have, and you start to see little things happening everywhere that just don't seem, A, like they line up with what the police said, or B, like you would want police to be acting.
Yeah. I think early on too, I mean, I'd watched the video and I put it to Chris and I said, this doesn't exactly look like what you told me. So it's good that we're following up on this because, yeah, there's a lot of different things that point toward it being a little bit misleading what they said.
Absolutely, yeah.
So let's go into those details. What did you have to check off? What kind of things did you investigate to be able to confirm that the conclusion that we're coming to is accurate?
So there's three major pieces to what the police said. First, that the officer was shoved. Second, that the crowd was unruly and presented a danger to him because they were, you know, that he needed to be sort of protected or rescued from this crowd. and three, that he was needed to be evacuated from the area. So the first thing that I looked at in just going over this video over and over and over again was just, how did he fall? And what you notice after, what I only noticed after watching this probably 10, 15 times, is that there's an officer in front of him who has dropped his baton, and he's kind of messing around, fumbling for this baton that he's dropped in the crowd. And he's like moving people's legs, and he's on one foot and he's scraping at the ground with his foot, and he's got one hand on the crowd and one hand in their feet. At one point, he actually grabs a woman in the crotch, seemingly by accident, but his mind is on getting this baton back. And as he gets it, that's when the officer falls over, who's directly behind him. So it doesn't appear to be a case where someone pushed the officer. It seems to be a case where the guy who was in front of him was not paying attention, and the crowd kind of surges, and he loses his footing. So that's the first one. That was the big thing. He was not shoved. Second, right after he falls, the crowd notices. And so the police officers that are there, there's like 6-7 police officers right there, and they're saying, "Get back, get back." And the crowd does. They start moving back immediately. You see people signaling to each other in the crowd. You know, there's hands up in the air, pushing, like sort of making a backwards motion, move back motion. There's people outside of the crowd who are on the protesters' side who are sort of saying, "Move this way, move this way." And they do, within 10, 15 seconds max. And so there's one officer who's standing right next to the one who fell. He's actually the guy who had lost his baton. He pulls out pepper spray right in that second. He pulls out pepper spray and he's pointing it towards the crowd, and he doesn't use it. As far as I'm able to tell, he never uses it in that instance, because he seems to decide it's not necessary. The crowd's already moving back. He puts it away after about 10 seconds. He holsters this pepper spray. So the third element here is that this officer needed to be medevaced. He's clear of the crowd within about 20 seconds, and he's crawling. They say that he was unconscious. If he was unconscious, it would have been maybe a second or two. And that could be serious. You know, a concussion is a big deal, and we shouldn't be minimizing someone's injury. But what I'm saying is that this was not a case where this person had to be put on a stretcher because he was unconscious, or that a big area needed to be cleared around him because he was unconscious. He was crawling. He was moving away very quickly. And so after he's clear of the crowd, he stands up, kind of dusts himself off. He chats with a couple of people in the background, and then he is just there. He's in the background for the rest of the video. He helps arrest someone. He picks up someone's backpack and moves that around. There's no point at which he's sort of, you know, sitting in the tailgate of a truck getting checked out by a medic or getting any kind of medical treatment that you can see. So he wasn't evacuated. He at the end of the video, walks toward a van with a car key in his hand, what appears to be a car key in his hand. You don't see where he goes. Maybe he gets into the passenger seat, but he's definitely walking on his own power into this van, which then leaves. And it's impossible to see whether he's driving or not, but it's definitely not a case of this person being, you know, loaded into an ambulance and evacuated. And so the other element here that the police sort of suggested was that the crowd needed to be dispersed to get him out of there. But there's vehicles. You see vehicles in going in and out of the frame of these various videos constantly. From the start of the incident to the end, there are vehicles driving in and out.
And we'll take a quick break here for a word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily podcast is brought to you by 211 British Columbia. Help starts here. Dial or text 211 to get help with finding support services in your community. Whether it's mental health supports, financial or legal assistance, housing or food. The service is free, confidential and available 24/7. Learn more at bc.211.ca. A lot of the stuff that you described in the video that we put together is quite obvious, and it's very difficult to take it or to describe it in any other way. But one of the details that you did look further into that isn't exactly obvious is something that is actually pretty damning for the RCMP, and that's that there already was a controlled pathway out. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this road that they're on is actually a really busy main road outside of Port Renfrew. And so there's a gate that's installed by industry to sort of stop people from going in and out, namely protesters from getting into what used to be their HQ. And so they, at that moment, the protesters, having chained themselves to that gate, have blocked access. But right at the beginning of this incident, right after the police arrived, they started building a side road. And by the time anything really heats up, they're able to get vehicles through. So the entire time, there's access to and from. This was not a case where they couldn't get through and they needed to clear the protesters, as was suggested by the RCMP, where they needed vehicle access or something. So they had to clear the protesters so they could open the gate. That's not the case. They had access the entire time, and you see vehicles coming and going the whole time.
Okay. In your investigation, you also spoke with some people who were there and got their firsthand account. And from what I read in the article, it seems like it was very aggressive and it was actually a bit of a dangerous scene. What were some of the stories that you were told?
Yeah, we heard a lot of things from people that we spoke with that seemed very, I don't want to say unbelievable, but they seemed pretty major, right? There were people's masks being ripped off, and there was someone who was sprayed with pepper spray in the crotch. There's a woman who said that she was pepper sprayed. She was kind of keeping her head down, and then as soon as she looked up, an officer was waiting for her and sprayed her right in the face. There was a guitar that was smashed for no reason. These kinds of random acts of violence, really, against people. And sort of gratuitous things. Hearing those stories is one thing, but we were able to confirm the substance of all of them. So the man who had his crotch sprayed and doused in pepper spray to the point where he had to strip naked, you see that spray happening. The woman who was looking down and then looked up, like to avoid the pepper spray being sprayed in her face, and then looked up and someone was ready for her. I can't find that woman in the crowd, but I see another person happening, that exact thing happening too. Like that, it's without a doubt, that's what happens right in that instance. And the guitar, the medic is one of the people that smashes the guitar. I mean, the medic is out there pepper spraying people as well, the RCMP medic.
Wow.
So you see all kinds of very questionable actions or things that I found shocking as someone who's not, affiliated with the police or reports on the police that often. I found that pretty shocking to see these things happening.
And just to put things into perspective about how brutal pepper spray can be, you in the article cited an account about the impacts of pepper spray. Can you describe that?
I was looking for sort of a manual that the RCMP may have published or that someone may have published that from the RCMP on when or why they're supposed to use pepper spray. I just wanted to sort of see how this lines up with their standard procedures. And in doing that research, I came across an example of an RCMP officer himself being pepper sprayed. They all go through this in their training, and it turns out that in around, I think it was 2005, they had an officer cadet write about his experience, which I thought was a pretty interesting way to explain the feeling of being pepper sprayed. A protester may have an incentive or a motivation to exaggerate, but this is an RCMP officer himself describing going through that experience, and it just sounds horrible. I mean, he talks about the burning as it happens, but then how much worse it gets over time as well, as it goes down your throat and up your nose and on your skin, and then it all happens over again once you shower because it's sort of reactivated. So I thought that was a pretty powerful description of how it actually feels to be pepper sprayed. That to me just showed in this incident where dozens and dozens of people are being indiscriminately pepper sprayed, kind of shows the severity of what actually happened.
In reading the article, it's also clear that Capital Daily and Ricochet took the opportunity to go a bit in depth on RCMP's history with the truth. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Ethan Cox, who we worked with on this story, he's become sort of an expert on RCMP actions, especially in remote places like Wet'suwet'en and Fair Creek, after having covered these things for years. And he did a lot of research on the RCMP's relationship with the truth in this article. He spoke with Jane Gerster, who's writing a book. She's a journalist who's writing a book on the RCMP overall. Spoke with Wally Opal. Spoke with a misinformation researcher. And overall, I mean, the impression that you get is this is not new, and this is something that the RCMP has been criticized for a number of times. I mean, you can even just look at the most recent denial of the extension of the injunction by Justice Thompson, where he cited the RCMP's use of force, and also that the RCMP had been somewhat unreliable in this and other instances.
When the RCMP lies to the public, it can be a lot more impactful than other organizations because they're supposed to be a reliable source for Canadians. So the impacts are dangerous. So how are they able to get away with this if there is a history?
Well, I mean, the RCMP, it has a sort of a different relationship with the government than you might expect. They're a paramilitary organization, effectively. So they deal with their own misconduct within their own ranks. And so they have the Civilian Review and Complaints Commission, which is toothless, and really it's an advisory body. This is not a body that can go in and say this officer went too far or this officer lied, they need to be punished. They say, you know, maybe it would be a good idea if you guys address this issue. So when it comes to times like this, when the RCMP has been caught red-handed, we don't really know for sure that something is going to come of it. It has in the past, where there have been reviews and there have been investigations, but it's not guaranteed. And if there is an investigation, it's not guaranteed that anything will come of it.
The relationship is quite interesting, and because of that, some provinces have created their own provincial force, and even Alberta is looking to do so. In speaking with the people that Capital Daily and Ricochet has for this article, does that seem like it's the right answer right now?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be prescriptive about it. I would say that there's good reason why some jurisdictions are rethinking their relationship with the RCMP, but I think that's definitely just up to the people and the leaders in those communities. Personally, I came away from this investigation feeling a lot less like I could trust the RCMP than I did going in. And that was just after spending hours and hours and hours looking at this footage and not only seeing what they were doing, but also seeing the way that they had then represented that to us and to the public.
So what happens next on our end? What's the next steps in this investigation if it does continue?
Well, you know, we've kind of hit a brick wall with the RCMP where they really just said, I think he's getting pretty fed up with me, and that's fair. Chris Menso told us the other day, this is the last thing we're going to have to say on this matter. We're not interested in commenting any further. And so we filed FOI requests, Freedom of Information requests, to get that body cam footage, among others. And we'll see where that goes. I mean, I don't know if that'll yield anything. They may redact it completely, or it may take years to get it, or it may be really interesting. So we'll have to wait and see what comes of that. As far as the RCMP goes, they're not really subject to any kind of real oversight body. So if they decide that they don't want to investigate this, then there may not be anything that comes of it on that part. And we did reach out to Mike Farnworth, who's the Solicitor General and now the Deputy Premier, to find out what this means to BC, which is paying the RCMP in this case. Mm-hmm. And he declined to be interviewed, but basically said that people, if they have complaints, can point them toward that oversight body, that Civilian Complaints Committee that I mentioned.
Well, if anything comes from anything, we will definitely be following up. Thank you, Jimmy, for all your work on this and for explaining it to us.
Thanks for having me on. And Jackie, thank you for your work on this. I mean, I should really point to you as having pushed Manso on this before anyone else. Your questioning to him was invaluable in getting those statements on the record so that we could then take a closer look and see where they lined up with the truth.
I feel like I should thank you again for something new, but I won't. Okay. If you want to see the full investigation and video, go to capitaldaily.ca. I wanted to just stress again that these investigations are made possible by you, and if you really want to help us, the best thing that you can do is actually become a member and help support us financially so that we can continue to put more resources into these types of stories. If you're interested in that, make sure to check out capitaldaily.ca/member, because there's some stuff in there for you as well, so go check it out. And if you want to support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a rating and a review, and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamports. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.